From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today. And as you know, people who tune into this show know I love talking about saints and future saints. In this show, we have two people on both ends of that spectrum. Somebody who's a servant of God, and that is the little Cajun saint, Charlene Richard. It was her birthday, birth anniversary on January 13th, so this is a perfect time to talk about her and someone who would become the youngest American saint. And also we'll be talking with Kristen Barrett Anderson, the director of the museum and the shrine for St. Marianne Cope, that saint from Hawaii. And so we'll be excited to talk to her later in the program. Check out my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday on EWTN, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And coming up on the 28th is the episode about from Sister Marie de Mondat Grance. And this is a fascinating story of Sister Marie de Mondat Grance, and we follow her extraordinary efforts to locate the house of Mary, the mother of Jesus, as she travels to Ephesus, Turkey, to bring this treasure to the Catholic Church. So check that one out. Sister Marie de Mondat Grance, They Might Be Saints, coming up on the 28th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. In my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, we have an episode about Banu. The Explorer Travel Series, it airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN Television. And in this one, I explore the stunning Marian apparition in Belgium to 11-year-old Mariette Becco, who had 8 visions of the Virgin of the Poor, who promised to intercede for the poor and suffering. And so that'll be coming up on February 1st at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I also encourage you to check out my Jubilee Year pilgrimage to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And that'll be from July 28th through August 4th this year. And as always on my pilgrimages, I go to places of saints and miracles. We'll see the Marian apparition sites and visit the Duomo in Milan. We'll go to Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held. And we'll walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence, home to many great artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, and we'll see the David, of course, as well as the site of a Marian apparition that was received by the 7 holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish up in Rome, of course, and see the incredible sites around the Vatican, and finish with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, and that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. So go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. You can find out more and sign up. Later in the show, we're going to be doing the Might Be Saint of the Day, and we'll be looking at the life of Blessed Henry Suso, who lived from 1295 to 1366 in Germany. In the 365 Days with Mary project, we look at the icon of the Mother of God, the Milk Giver, from Kidron Valley in Palestine in the 13th century. The question of the week, does the church allow people to believe that approved apparitions could have demonic sources? That's a hard question. I'll try to answer that one later in the show. And the Might Be Saint of the Day, or the Miracle of the Day, the vision of Saint Angela Merici on January 24th, 1540 in Brescia in Italy. We'll talk about that miracle later in the show. Let's take a look at miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And there was kind of an interesting story that I thought was pretty remarkable. In recent history, in 2022, we saw the canonization of St. Charles de Foucauld. And the story of how his miracle came to be was absolutely amazing. And so the story is that recognized as a miracle survivor by the Catholic Church, after falling more than 15 meters on a construction site in 2016, this man named Charles, he contributed to the canonization of Charles de Foucauld, which happened in 2022. The carpenter had just participated in the creation of a reliquary of the new French saint, which will be inaugurated in early February in Rome. Young Charles is working on the restoration of a church frame when he fell about 15 meters before impaling himself on an overturned bench And the young man got up with a stake that pierced his stomach, and he was hospitalized urgently, and he escaped from that situation without any after effects. His boss at the time, a practicing Catholic, said only a miracle could have saved his employee from death. And at the hospital, he talked about, or he learned about St. Charles de Foucauld. And this is the beginning of a story that leads the carpenter to testify for the canonization trial of the Holy Hermit. 4 years later, his rescue is officially recognized to the intercession of Charles de Foucauld. And on May 15th, 2022, the young carpenter found himself in St. Peter's Square in Rome for the canonization of his universal little brother, as he called him. And so this is absolutely amazing, the story with the man who was working in the church, fell from the scaffolding and was impaled. And this was all on the feast day of St. Charles Foucauld. They prayed for his intercession. And that man who was expected to die from the experience was able to walk away eventually. So truly an amazing story. I've got that story posted to the Facebook page of They Might Be Saints. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And last week we had a great interview with Len McKean from the Bishop Berger Association, talking about Venerable Bishop Frederick Berger. And so he's the snowshoe priest who walked all over Michigan to evangelize. And so the question for this week, or from last week, who is the only person from Michigan who is a blessed? Currently, Bishop Berger is a venerable, but who is the only person from Michigan who is a blessed? And of course, that answer is Blessed Solanus Casey. I always know it's an easy question when I get many people writing with the correct answer. The fastest one was Carol Ann from Michigan. Thank you, Carol Ann, for your answer. And you'll be receiving the image of the faces of Mary. Now, for this week's question, we're talking today about the little Cajun saint, Charlene Richard, who, if canonized, would become the youngest American saint in history. And the question is, who currently is the youngest American saint at the time of their death? And again, who currently is the youngest American saint at the time of their death? If you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you're the fastest with the right answer, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Nanette Reiners, the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation, about the little Cajun saint and her miracles. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about saints and American saints specifically, and even more than that, people on the path to sainthood in America. And perhaps there are as many as 100 people along that path. We're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. And there's some remarkable stories from every part of the United States, but there are a number of causes actually from the Louisiana area. And one of the ones that's caught my attention relates to servant of God, Charlene Richard, partly because of her young age. She died at the age of 12. So if canonized, she would become the youngest American saint. So we've got her eyes on her, and her birthday or birth anniversary just passed on January 13th. She was born in the year 1947. So it's a perfect time to turn our attention to the little Cajun saint, and that's Charlene Richard. And today joining us, we've got the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation, and that is Nanette Reiners. Welcome to the program today, Nanette.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us on the program today, and this is an exciting thing, isn't it? The movement
yes,
of this cause, I'm sure that you've been working on this for some years now, but it wasn't so long ago that we saw the announcement from the USCCB, the U.S. Bishops' Conference, that this canonization cause is official, and it's underway with her being declared a servant of God, and we can move ahead in the sainthood process for Charlene. And many people in Louisiana, of course, know her. She's somewhat of a famous figure there. But for the rest of the United States, many people haven't even heard her name. Tell us a little bit. Who was she? Who was Charlene Richard?
Charlene was a little girl from Richard, and at the age of 12, she died with leukemia. She always honored St. Therese, and she's often asked her grandmother if she could be like her. And the grandmother told her, you know, that yes, you know, she just had to pray and stuff. But when in the hospital, she died 13 days after they diagnosed her. But people would, you know, pray to her and ask for her to intercede. And if you come down here and ask anybody, you know, about Charlene, they'll tell you that, you know, she's answered many prayers. There's been many miracles.
And when we talk about some of those miracles or reports of intercessions or blessings or graces, what are there some of the types of things that people have claimed over the years?
They had one incident where they had a girl that was sick with cancer. And on Sundays, they would come. Her and her parents would come to the grave. And that particular Sunday, they had to pick her out of bed, put her in the car. And so when they got to the grave, they picked her out of the car, put her by the gravesite. And they prayed as a family, and then the daddy said he stepped back and let the mom and the daughter pray. And he said her color was, she was white as a ghost, and she was really sick. But after her and her mom prayed, she traced Charlene's name on the headstone, and the dad said her color came back, and she was able to walk away from the grave and walk back to the car, which she wasn't able to do any of that before going to the grave.
Amazing.
They have another incident where this baby was born. When it was born, the doctor said that it was going to be mongoloid because they had signs, you know, the ears towards the back and stuff. Well, when the pediatrician came in, he said, I don't know who told you that, but he said, nothing's wrong with the baby. This lady is now a nun serving in Africa, I believe, and she's perfectly healthy. And then just two Saturdays ago, I was asked to go to Children's Hospital in Texas with the relic that the foundation has. And we prayed over a little 7-year-old boy and a 4-month-old boy. And the mom and dad texted me and said that since we had gone to the grave, to the hospital and prayed with this little baby and placed the relic on him, that he hadn't thrown up since then. So we contribute all that to miracles, you know, with Charlene's intercession.
Absolutely incredible. I'm sure there's a long list over the years. Charlene died in 1947, and her canonization cause is just launching officially with her being named a servant of God by the USCCB in recent years here. And, of course, with the canonization cause, the search for miracles is very important. And after the stage of venerable, they use those miracles to promote them ahead to blessed and then to saint. But, of course, when we talk about somebody being declared a venerable, they talk about the life of heroic virtue of the potential saint. When you look at the life of Charlene Richard, her miracles aside, what are those things that that people point to when they say this was truly a holy girl?
She was straight A's, I think, in school. She played basketball. She was the captain of the basketball team, but she always took up for the underdogs. Her oldest brother tells the story that while on the school bus one day, they had this new little girl to the area, and she was poorer than the poorest people that lived in Richard. She had tattered clothes. Her hair wasn't always done. And so some of the kids on the bus were teasing this little girl. So Charlene went to the bus driver and asked, you know, if he was going to do anything. And he told her to go back and sit down. And so when she was going back to sit down, she said, well, if he's not going to do anything, I'm going to do something. And back then, her mom would let her have sock hop dance, and they'd play Elvis music by Elvis. And the mom would do Kool-Aid and cookies. So Charlene told all those kids on the bus that if they didn't stop teasing this little girl, they weren't going to be invited to her sock hop dance. So a bunch of them, you know, befriended this little girl, and there was never no bullying after that. But she always prayed. She led the rosary at night when they would do a family rosary. one incident her brother told was, you know, after supper, she would always tell her mom to go relax, and she would clean the kitchen. And she just was in the Catholic Junior League Catholic Daughters. She just was a very holy person.
Amazing.
You know, and prayed a lot. And while she was in the hospital, every time the priest chaplain of the hospital would walk in, she would ask who she was supposed to suffer for that day. So she offered her suffering for, you know, other people.
Wonderful. Someone with a very deep spirituality. We're talking today with Nanette Reiners, the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation. And so there are many people, the USCCB in 2021 officially gave its go-ahead for this canonization cause. And now we're 3 years in, and maybe perhaps even 4 years in, coming into the new year, advancing the cause. Tell us a little bit about the activities of the Charlene Richard Foundation. What do you do to promote the life of this future saint and to get the word out about her?
Well, we are a group of people from Richard. Every second Friday of the month, we get together, and we put together these prayer cloth little packets, and it includes a prayer card, Charlene prayer card, a cloth with her picture on it, and another card that explains what a prayer card is. And it's been a lot more than that, but last count that the lady that started it got was 265,000 packets that have been put together.
Wow.
And all of these are blessed before they leave our church. And I've mailed these all over the world. I just found out by mailing, you know, since being the president, that you need a certain stamp to mail stuff overseas and stuff. But we get every day I get emails from someone wanting these packets with the prayer card. And that people can get them by sending an email to Charlene Richard Foundation @gmail.com, or they can give me a call. My number is 337-322-4549. The easiest way, though, is by email. That way I can keep track and make sure I get everybody, because lately people have been texting me my personal email, the foundation email, calling, and it's just easier if everything goes through the Charlene Foundation email. There's no cost for these packets. We do take donations, but every day people are requesting these and prayers and stuff. So we do that. People have sent their intentions by email, and I'll make a copy of that and put it at her grave site. And there's people that visit her grave 24/7 every day of the week. No matter what time it is, Father lets out his little dog sometimes at night and says 2-3 o'clock in the morning. If he goes, let his dog out, people are at the grave praying. And I've witnessed a lot of this to myself. I'm not sure how many people have heard, but we had a lady that was pregnant from New York. And, not long, I guess it might've been between Thanksgiving and Christmas. She flew down here to pray at the grave. She had Father bless her. We gave her a bunch of merchandise from the foundation. And her baby was born December the 27th. And the doctor said the baby was healthy, healthy, nothing was wrong with it. So that was another miracle that, you know, they Charlene intervened for.
Incredible. We've been talking today with Nanette Reiners, the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation, about the little Cajun saint and some of the miracles and wonders that have been attributed to her on this path to canonization. And Nanette, as we reflect on the life of Charlene and we think about the example that she can give for us and how she can inspire us and how people can seek your intercession, What is the meaning of her life, you might say, looking at her young life?
She always put God first, and she was there to help people and to serve people, and just show everybody that, you know, at any age, you can become a saint.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Nanette Reiners, for reflecting on the life of Charlene Richard and for telling us about the miracles and the blessings that have been garnered from people who seek the intercession of the little Cajun saint. Thank you so much, Nanette, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you.
God bless. That was Nanette Reiners, the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation, could be the youngest saint in the history of the United States as she advances along that path from servant of God to venerable, to blessed, and then to saint. For people who want more information, they can contact the Charlene Richard Foundation at charlenerichardfoundation.com. Or, as Nanette mentioned, you can send her an email directly to charlenerichardfoundation@gmail.com to receive any of those materials in the mail. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And of course, I love getting the email questions. I probably have the strangest inbox of anybody you know. But I also love answering questions in person. And I do that when I travel around the country, maybe 20 times a year, to different shrines or parishes or conferences, and they have me talk about miracles, of course. And I speak for about 45 minutes, and then afterwards I open it up to questions, 15, 20, 30 minutes or more, and people have some really good ones, and I always love to hear what people are thinking about. And you can have me speak at your parish if you go to miraclehunter.com and click on the contact tab and send me a message that way. And who knows, maybe I'll be speaking at a parish in your area sometime soon. So the question from this week was a really good one. And I've never gotten this question before. And I always love getting those questions that I've never gotten before because they really make me think. So the question was, Dear Miracle Hunter, the Catholic Church does not force anyone to believe in approved apparitions. True apparitions like Fatima appear to involve too much for a claim to be just a clever fraud of human origin, yet we're permitted to reject it. And so the only reason a person might reject it is thinking that it could be of demonic origin. Therefore, it seems that the Catholic Church is permitting Catholics to hold that approved apparitions could be in the form of the devil, as long as you don't say they contradict the faith. So thank you, Stephen. So that was an interesting question, seeking my comment on that. And it is kind of interesting because in the judgments of the Church, at least going up until this most recent year when they announced new norms for the congregation for proceeding and judging alleged private revelations and apparitions, there was never a category that said, yes, this is supernatural or preternatural. This is a inexplicable event that we can attribute to the devil. There was no such category as that where they said that this wasn't a human intervention. This was something else. And so the question here from Stephen, he's sort of saying that as long as there's nothing contrary to faith and morals, and it's something that's clearly inexplicable by human means, doesn't that imply that people could have the opinion of that it is from the devil? And so, of course, when we talk about Marian apparitions and things of this nature, one of the reasons that the Catholic Church says that we're not forced to believe in it, we're permitted to reject it if we want, we don't have to incorporate it into our life of faith, is because it occurs outside of public revelation that ceased with the death of John the Evangelist, you might say. Everything occurring after that, any of the miracles or apparitions or things throughout the centuries, even from great saints, we can safely ignore them if we want to. That's not always a good idea, but we could if we wanted to. And so we would say that anything falls outside of public revelation, that being private revelation, does not complete the deposit of faith. And so, and of course, it's important to say that the idea also is that something, if it's claimed to be of demonic origin, it would be sort of contradictory for a demon and maybe impossible to do to lead people to Christ. that could not be the motivation for demonic activity. So it would be quite silly, of course, to attribute a Marian apparition to demonic activity if it is something that promotes the faith and draws people closer to Christ. So thank you, Stephen, for your question. It's an interesting one, but I think that it doesn't make any sense for someone to attribute something to demonic origin if it is a truly recognized apparition of the Catholic Church. But if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. People can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, or download the free app from the iOS App Store, 365 Days with Mary, a Marian calendar. And for every single day of the year, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. Of course, you know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian title from around the world that lines up exactly with feast days and miracles and building of basilicas and other celebrations that line up every day of the calendar year. So for today's day, we've got the icon of the Mother of God, the Milk Giver, from Kidron Valley in Palestine in the 13th century. And the story goes that this milk giver icon of the Mother of God was originally located at the Lavra of St. Sava near Jerusalem. Before his death, he foretold that a royal pilgrim having the same name as himself would visit the Lavra. St. Sava told the brethren to give the wonder-working icon to the pilgrim as a blessing. In the 13th century, St. Sava of Serbia visited the Lavra. As he approached the reliquary of the founder, the brethren asked the visitor his name, and he told him that he was Archbishop Sava of Serbia, and giving the instructions of their founder, the monks gave St. Sava the Milk Giver icon. And that is the icon of the Mother of God, the Milk Giver, from Kidron Valley in Palestine, celebrated on today's date, January 25th. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about miracles happening throughout Christian history that line up exactly to the day's date. And so for today's date, January 25th, we have the vision of St. Angela Merici that occurred on January 25th, 1540, in Brescia, in Italy. And St. Angela Merici, she's the foundress of the Ursuline Order. She died on January 27th in 1540. However, 2 days earlier, on January 25th, she reportedly experienced a profound vision of heavenly glory that reinforced the mission of establishing a religious community dedicated to the education of girls. And this vision is considered by some historians to have occurred on the feast of St. Paul as a divine parallel to his conversion experience. And that is the miracle of the day from January 25th, 1540, the vision of St. Angela Merici. And for each week, we'll be presenting a new miracle of the day. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week as well, where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood and give you updates of who's coming down the pipeline, you might say. And very recently, earlier this month, we saw the announcement of some modern martyrs. And this is a new initiative of the Catholic Church, martyrs from the year 2000. And it's a sort of an interfaith effort, you might say, an effort of the Catholic Church, but to recognize martyrs of all Christian denominations. And so we have one that's been recognized from the United States, Sister Dorothy Stang. She's a U.S. member of the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur. She was shot down in the Amazon 20 years ago. And on January 10th, some relics of hers were placed on an altar during an evening prayer service led by Archbishop Fabio Fabien, the Secretary of the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And the service followed a symposium at Rome's Gregorian University on Sister Dorothy's life and ministry and women's leadership in the climate movement. And because of the work Sister Dorothy did in favor of land rights for the poor and the sustainable development in that region, many large landowners became angry, and she received death threats. And a rancher and three others were convicted of plotting her death and killing her in the year 2005. And while she hasn't formally been declared an official martyr by the processes of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, we can certainly expect that this will happen, given that she was highlighted in such a way, recognized as this new martyrdom project, and the whole symposium was dedicated to her life. So I think it's a fairly safe bet that we will see Sister Dorothy Stang from the United States recognized someday soon as a martyr from the United States. And let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We're talking about They Might Be Saints. That lines up to my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And it also aligns to my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available at the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com, where I outline the lives of 24 servants of God and blesseds. That's how many people in the United States have achieved that level on the path to sainthood. I think it's my best book. You can pick it up, again, at EWTNRC.com. And for today's date, the person on the path to sainthood, the might-be saint to recognize whose feast day is today, is Blessed Henry Suso, who lived from the year 1295 to 1366 in Germany. And his feast day is January 25th. He was born on March 21st, 1295, at Umberlingen in Germany as Heinrich von Berg. And he was born to German nobility, and he joined the Dominicans at age 13, and he was known as a mystic. He served as a prior at several houses and was a theological student at Meister Eckhart in Cologne in Germany from 1322 to 1325. He taught in Constance, Switzerland, and spent years imprisoned in a dungeon due to slander and his association with Meister Eckhart, a controversial figure in his day. He was a great spiritual writer and used the pen name Amandus, and he was a noted preacher in Switzerland in that area of the Upper Rhine, and he was a spiritual advisor to Dominicans in the spiritual community called Gottesfreund. And he was given to great austerities. Henry owned a large, half-length, tight-fitting coarse undergarment equipped with 150 sharp brass nails, the points facing inward, and he used it as his nightshirt. And after 16 years of this, an angel was said to appear to him on Pentecost Sunday and whispered that God wanted him to discontinue this practice, and he threw the shirt into the Rhine. He died on January 25th, 1366, at Ulm, Germany, of natural causes, not of the nails, apparently. And he was beatified in 1831 by Pope Gregory the 16th. And he is, with one more miracle, Blessed Henry Suso will become Saint Henry Suso. And he's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for people who want to check out the television series, They Might Be Saints, you can go to theymightbesaints.com. And you can find out that this week's show, They Might Be Saints, is about Sister Marie de Monacrance. And the fascinating story of Sister Marie de Monacrance, we look at her extraordinary efforts to locate the house of Mary, the mother of Jesus, as she travels to Ephesus, Turkey, to bring this treasure to the Catholic Church. And that will air on EWTN television on Wednesday, January 28th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And go to theymightbesaints.com for more information. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Kristen Barrett Anderson, the director of the museum and shrine dedicated to St. Marian Cope, whose feast day is the 23rd of this month. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk a lot about saints on the show and American saints, and there aren't that many from the United States that have been recognized by Rome as having their two miracles that are recognized to be saints who lived in the United States. And my book, They Might Be Saints, highlights some of these people. And one of these people is St. Marianne Cope. You might know her through her work in Hawaii, in the leper colony there, and the incredible legacy that she's left there. And she's recognized as a saint in our Catholic Church. Well, we're so excited when, in lieu of her feast day, which is celebrated every year on January 23rd, to talk to Kristen Barrett Anderson. She's the director of the Museum and Shrine, which honors St. Marianne Cope. Welcome back to the program today, Kristen.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you again. And it's always an exciting time to bring to light saints that maybe most Americans aren't even aware of, which I know on the East Coast, perhaps St. Marianne Cope is a little better known, but many people know St. Damien, but not St. Marianne. So if we were to draw attention to St. Marianne today, who was she? Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, she was an amazing leader in her community here in Syracuse. She was part of the definitorium that determined to start hospitals here to care for people who were not being cared for. So St. Elizabeth's in Utica, New York, and then St. Joseph's Hospital right here in Syracuse. And as administrator here, she developed programming and rules in infection control and hygiene and patients' rights that weren't being seen anywhere else in the U.S.
Wonderful. And tell us about her time in Hawaii. How did she end up going there, and what was her impact when she went?
Yeah, so she was elected leader of her community shortly after her administration here at St. Joseph's Hospital. So she received the letter that was written on behalf of the king and queen of the then Sandwich Islands, now Hawaii. And they were looking for people, sisters of charity, to come and care for the thousands and thousands of people who were being afflicted with leprosy, now known as Hansen's disease. And Marianne took six sisters over. They started hospitals and schools and ended up the last 35 years of her life on Kalapapa, which was the exile settlement set up for patients.
And one of the things that I've always, that's always kind of made me smile or made me reflect on with St. Marian Cope is how she really focused on the dignity of each person, including doing such things as taking designs out of Vogue magazine and making outfits and clothing for the women to give them dignity and to celebrate them in a way that you might not expect in a colony such as that.
Yeah, I mean, it was whole mind, body, spirit healing. Besides medical care, they wanted to give each person a full, whole life, no matter how long or short or challenged. And the question is, how do you do that on a peninsula in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? And so you have to bring everything there so that they could choose how they would live their lives, and teaching them to sew and giving them patterns. And music, instruments, seeds for gardening, literature, sports, everything was available so that people could choose their own life.
Yeah, amazing. And talk about the legacy of St. Marian Cope. She, after her death, her reputation for holiness was far and wide, and she was actually recognized a saint in our Catholic Church. Talk a little bit about that that process of recognizing her life of heroic virtue and moving that forward towards her canonization.
Yeah, it was pretty early on, even before her death, that her community realized, and a lot of people realized, that she was very special and that bringing that cause for canonization was a worthwhile move. At that point, they went to Sister Leopoldina Burns, who had been keeping a daily diary during that 35 years on Kalapapa, and asked her to write a story and take all of those journals and create a little history of life on Kalapapa and life with Marianne. So it started very early, and then it was 1973 when the Superior General at that point gave the approval to really dedicate one sister's time, full time, towards the canonization process. Of course, after that, you have the exhumation of remains, and you have the pursuit of documenting two miracles. And all of that, came to fruition in 2012.
Wonderful. And just to recap those two miracles, we've talked about this on the program before, but tell us just in a short form the two miracles that were used for her canonization.
Yeah, Kate Mahoney was the first, and she was 14 years old at the time and found herself deathly ill in the hospital, organs shutting down, and the director of the cause, Sister Mary Lawrence Hanley, actually knew her parents and contacted them and said, would you be willing to have your family, your friends pray to Marianne for her intercession and Kate's healing? And incredibly, Sister Mary Lawrence would put out each week, today, this week, we're praying for Kate's liver. And then the next week it would be now we're praying for her kidneys. And the doctors actually saw improvement in those organs during that time period. So when it came time to verify all of this as there being no medical reason for her healing, the doctors could document and see these improvements until she was until her organs were totally healed.
Truly, truly amazing. And yeah, we've spoken with Kate on the show before, and her story is absolutely incredible. And the other miracle, was it Sharon Smith? Was that the name of the other recipient?
It was. She was right here at St. Joseph's Hospital, and similar, you know, total organ shut down, and people were waiting for her to die. And one of the sisters who was volunteering up here had, at that point, a little bag of soil from Marianne's grave and pinned it to her and started prayers with the family and friends and the sisters and the same. You know, at one point they just said, you know, you're all good. Are you hungry? Is there something you'd like to eat? I mean, she just, it turned right around.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Kristen Barrett Anderson, the director of the Museum and Shrine dedicated to St. Mary Ann Cope. And we're talking about her miracles that were used toward her canonization. And of course, the Catholic Church requires extreme documentation in order for any of those to be validated and used to show the intercession of a potential saint. I know that there are miracles that still even happen, even today, even the non-documented kind, things that are reported to your shrine. Talk a little bit about that, the miracles that continue on through the intercession of St. Mary Ann Cope.
Yeah, we receive cards and calls and visitors, you know, every week that are talking about their own miracles and how they prayed and how someone healed. And it's inspiring. It's incredible. We know that her legacy continues on every single day in the people who are inspired by her.
Absolutely amazing. And people who want to find out more about St. Mary Ann Cope can go to the website, stmaryann.org, but they can also visit your museum and shrine. Tell us a little bit, especially about some of the new offerings that are being set out there at the museum now.
Yeah, the museum is a beautiful little gem here in Syracuse next to St. Joseph's Hospital, appropriately, and it tells the story of Mary Ann and the Sisters of St. Francis all the way from her emigrating here as a toddler from Germany and then entering the community and then all the way through the canonization. And we are carrying on her legacy by providing programming to caregivers, and especially those who find themselves at home caring for loved ones. There's so much information and so many resources that could benefit them between programming in compassionate empathy and communication and simply, you know, learning how to become an advocate through the healthcare system. So we spend a lot of time with nursing schools and people who are investigating and in the healthcare industry and teaching how they too can be inspired and learn through the practices of Mary Ann to be a better caregiver and to provide better care for their patients.
Wonderful. And as we wrap up the interview today, in lieu of her feast day, which is upon us, tell us a little bit about how we can turn to St. Mary Ann for inspiration and perhaps for her intercession in today's world.
Well, I've been thinking a lot lately about faith and faith over fear and how Mary Ann's faith gave her the strength and the courage to say yes when she was offered a challenge to, you know, travel to a foreign land and a foreign language and care for patients with this really terrifying disease. And I've been asking a lot of people, what gives you your faith and your strength and your courage over fear so that we can also see and be aware of injustices? And how can we take that faith to allow us to speak out against injustice? And how can it allow us to act in service to those who are marginalized. I think we forget that we all, in our core, have this strength and this courage through our faith that we can make decisions to be in better service of others. And I think that, you know, finding that and seeking it out and being aware of it and acting on it are incredible ways to honor Marianne and all the saints.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you, Kristen Baird Anderson, Director of the Museum and Shrine in honor of St. Marianne Cope. Thank you for talking to us today about this great American saint. And we encourage people to check out the website, stmarianne.org. Thanks so much, Kristen, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, Michael.
God bless. That was Kristen Baird Anderson, Director of the Museum and Shrine. Check that one out, that place dedicated to the saint, St. Marianne Cope. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today. Nanette Reiner is the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation, and Kristen Baird Anderson talking to us about St. Marianne Cope. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Banu. I'll be investigating the stunning Marian apparition in Belgium, where an 11-year-old girl, Mariette Becco, witnessed 8 visions of the Virgin of the Poor, who promised to intercede for the poor and suffering. And check out my pilgrimage coming up to Italy this summer. Go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to see all the miracle sites of Milan, Florence, Turin, and Rome. Find out all the details, and you can sign up for this pilgrimage at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.